You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network 706 on this Tuesday morning, March 11th. Nice to have you here. This hour, we're going to be talking to our friend Hans Breitenmoser, a dairy farmer from up near Merrill. We'll be talking about farmers engaged in lobbying, whether it's in Madison or Washington, D.C. There are farmers who can take time this time of year before things really get busy with spring planting and everything to tell their elected representatives from the heart what are the things that concern them most. And needless to say, given recent events, there are some very heartfelt things on that list that we will talk to Hans about in just a little bit. We've also got Brittany Merlot's forecast. We've also asked Dan Hagen from Newswatch 12 up in Rhinelander to hang around for a special reason. We'll play some games here in a minute. But first, Brittany's here to play a game with the weather called It's Up, It's Down, It's Up, It's Down, It's Up. Where's the temperature going today compared to yesterday, which was gorgeous?
I know. Oh, goodness. Yesterday, we broke records across the state. 72 degrees in La Crosse. Can you believe that? 72. That is Florida weather in early March. So even Eau Claire, 69 degrees. Madison, Milwaukee coming in at 67 degrees. It felt fantastic. But do not wear shorts and short sleeves today. You're going to regret it if you did, because we have a high pressure system in place. A cold front moved through last night. So highs today are only going to be in the upper 30s far north to low 40s far south. So that's quite a jump down. But it is more closer to our average high temperatures. This is where we should be for this time of year. So yesterday was that extremely warm. It was about 30 degrees warmer than average. So we are going to stay dry all week. We've got this huge high pressure system staying here for us. We're looking at a ton of sunshine today, tomorrow, and then things start to change Friday. Now we will see temperatures rise tomorrow into those low to mid 50s. Friday looks extremely warm too. Now, I don't think we're going to break records, but we will hit those upper 60s to low 70s one more time. But then we're looking at a chance of some strong storms moving in Friday night, a rainy Saturday, and potentially some snow on Sunday. So a roller coaster. And right now we're at the bottom. We will be climbing right back up the hill and crashing back down again.
It was a week ago that my wife had to stay up in Rice Lake because the winter weather was going to be so bad.
Isn't that crazy?
And then 6 days later, we're busting 70. It is truly, as Rob says from Tigerton, the March Madness of weather. That's exactly 100%. What it is. In Tigerton, he says it's clear and 35. The high yesterday in Tigerton, 66 degrees, four past the record. He said, today I have to take my truck, Old Beast, to my mechanic, Todd, for an oil change, fix a light assembly, and check the exhaust. Warm weather has me thinking about mowing season and getting my tractors ready. Last year, he says, I started mowing April 28th, and back in 2012, I was mowing lawns on March 28th.
Wow.
It's just nice to think about the green grass that's going to be coming really soon here.
Right around the corner. That's exciting. I love the smell of fresh cut grass. I'm excited for that.
Cannot wait for that. We kept Dan around because we were talking off air about one of the games that he likes to play or has played that apparently Greg wanted to play. The game is Dungeons and Dragons. Brittany, I just wanted to see if you had any exposure to the game or you know, perhaps new other little nerdnicks who wanted to impress you with their D&D knowledge.
Wow.
You know, I never played. No.
Okay. Well, Greg too. But Dan, you're a pro at this. I mean, not like professional, like you make money, but you've got some experience.
That's right. I dungeon master. I DM for a campaign right now of six people. So Brittany, imagine you're a half orc running through the mountains right now.
We promise that's FCC compliant.
You come across a small gnome trying to grab a mushroom. And that's Greg. Greg, yeah, what
that's,
do you...
that's what I thought was going to happen.
But as Dan's, you know, demonstrating for us, this whole thing, not the whole thing, but there's a lot of improv going on mm-hmm. here, Greg, which I think is part of what appeals to you when you said you were interested in it but never got into it.
No, I actually... It far predates my comedy years. When I was a young kid, my friend said, "Do you want to come play D&D?" And I said to my father, "We're going to play D&D." And he goes, "No, you're not." Because back in the 80s, there were some problems with D&D and D&D players and things like that. And but bad reputation surrounding the game. So that was squashed very quickly. So I never got into it.
These were the same people that thought the Teletubbies were like too sexual or satanic or God knows what. Yeah. There were a lot of busybodies in the 80s and things like this growing up, but Dan Hagen, rebel that he is, fought through it to be the dungeon master that he is today. Do you how often do you play at all?
We play once a week, pretty much.
Once a week?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, once a week. It's like a couple hours each time. We go to a person's house at 6:30, we stay until at least 10:30. I have in my hand some dice.
Oh, yes.
But
yes,
okay. The famous one is this D20. It's this 20-sided dice. So whenever anything happens, you roll this 20-sided dice, and if it's usually like above a 10 or something, it's pretty good. Below a 10, not so good.
Well, there you go, folks. If you've ever seen the Disney movie,
everything he can not to make fun of this right now. I can just see it in his face.
Okay. I have an idea, Pat. You, Greg, and Brittany, we start a D&D podcast. These are real things, okay? And we go around. Maybe it's a mythical Wisconsin, and we travel.
Okay. That sounds like fun. Go around Wisconsin and travel mythically? Okay.
You can chase galactic storms, Brittany.
Yes, can I?
So if any of you have seen the Parent Trap, 14-year-old Dan Hagen swapped bodies and is telling us more about Dungeons & Dragons than I expected to know, and hopefully has intrigued a lot of people. Cassandra writes in on YouTube, "My husband plays now. He loves it. Weekly goes into Appleton and plays at a board game store. The biggest issue is he can't stop buying dice."
Why
do you understand the struggle is real?
Thing. These are some cheap dice I have, but you can buy, you know, $100 dice. There's dice made out of bone. There's everything. What? But I will say it is fun. Like, there's no screens, right? It's just you hanging out with your friends, mm-hmm. and there's no small talk either because you're just trying to, like, defeat a dragon or something. So you got to stay focused.
I love this. This is just so great. This is more than I've ever heard about the game previously. You know, because I'm just jealous of those of you who grew up with.
How I feel, Pat. It's
friends,
exactly,
and games mm-hmm. and things like that. But Dan, now that we know that you are a dungeon master,
that's right.
We will have to find a way to weave this into your regular Tuesday morning visits with us.
Absolutely.
Maybe it's a lesson, a tip a day or something to let's help Greg and Brittany become the dungeon masters or the orcas or whatever you said that they are destined to be.
I can make just have
Greg,
to get
we can do this.
And a key thing is a character voice. So last night one of my villains was Rog, who is an Australian guy who, you know,
Greg, how is this not? You should be. This is just screaming your name.
I know, but yeah. it's just. As Dan says, it takes. I mean, you have to have a weekly commitment to this, and that's tough for me. I work a lot, so.
Oh yeah, please. I got to work my way. I need a weekly commitment to touch my toes before I can engage in anything like, you know, luxury game playing. Brittany, as always, you're the best sport in the world. Thank you.
Thank you.
We just wanted to ask if you played it, and now that you've learned so much about it. You know,
I'm interested. Yeah, I know. Thank you.
All right. Thanks to both of you. Have a wonderful day. And, you know, happy dragoning, dungeoning, happy dice rolling. Is there a greeting for D&D?
Pat, I think we need to talk offline, I think, about you're way off base.
Just a whole different subculture.
You
secret handshake.
Dungeon master.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeesh, I'm in trouble here. All right, Dan, Brittany, have a great day.
You too.
We'll see you later. Yeah. All right. Hans Breitenmoser is coming up in just over 15 minutes here to talk to us more about what's happening with the Trump administration's cuts and trade wars and things like that. There's a new wrinkle that has come up as well, and this story was out of Politico about the Trump administration, the USDA under Trump, is now cutting a $1 billion program that helps make sure that local farmers and their produce, that food can be locally sourced to schools and school lunch programs. It's only the latest example of where farmers in Wisconsin are getting treated badly. Let's leave it at that and not say any bad words here. By the Trump administration to this point, Derek Van Orden, a congressman from the 3rd Congressional District, has spent his past term in office crowing about being on the House Agriculture Committee, but doesn't have anything to show for it. The farm bill was kicked down the road over and over again to the point where a bill that originally passed in, 2018 has not been updated since and still can't be in this Congress. Meanwhile, farmers are now seeing cuts to their conservation programs and, as I mentioned, seeing these punishing tariffs that are going to hurt them far more than it's going to hurt Canada, Mexico, China, anybody like that. So at this point, we can tell you this morning that there's not one, there's two Democrats, both from the Chippewa Valley, who are indicating today that they may jump into the race good and early for 2026. Yes, for 2026. This is only the 8th week of the Trump presidency and Van Orden's second term. And already Eau Claire City Council President Emily Berge has confirmed to Up North News that she's considering a run for Congress. And Rebecca Cook, who ran against Van Orden last year, has confirmed to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel her interest in trying again to unseat the volatile Republican incumbent. For Berge, a lot of it is born of frustration by other Chippewa Valley constituents that Van Orden is basically ignoring the largest city in his district. And for Cook, of course, it's the trade issues and reproductive health measures as well. Cook ran ahead of Kamala Harris and Tammy Baldwin in the 2024 voting, but still fell short by about 12,000 votes, the same margin that Brad Paff fell short of running against Van Orden in 2022. But again, Democrats will see this district as winnable. They see Van Orden's constant social media taunting and insults as making him vulnerable along with his record. And so stay tuned for these two candidates and possibly more in that third district race. More after this, you're Up North.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
In today's history lesson, Debbie Gibson, then 18 years old in 1989, had the number one album in the country, Electric Youth. We have today's history lesson every morning at 6:50 with little spillovers into bumper music like this on Up North News Radio, coming up on 7:22 right now. In sports, the Milwaukee Bucks will be in Indiana tonight, taking on the Pacers. Meanwhile, the Badger men's basketball team is getting set for the Big Ten Conference Tournament. Debbie, that's enough. I'm trying to do sports over here. The Badgers are in the Big Ten Conference Tournament Thursday. Opponent TBD, but coverage begins Thursday at 12:30 on Civic Media stations in Amory, Wisconsin Rapids, and Richland Center. Check out the Civic Media app or civicmedia.us to learn more. In the Marquette men's basketball team is in the Big East Conference Tournament. They, too, get a first-round bye, so they, too, will first play on Thursday afternoon against the number 4 seed Xavier at Madison Square Garden. Coming up tomorrow, is the first ever live event by Up North News, a forum about the Wisconsin State Supreme Court race on April 11th. And the many ways that the outcome of this election is going to have a direct impact, truly black or white, one way or the other, on some serious issues around reproductive health rights, around education, and frankly, the Wisconsin economy overall. I don't mind telling you that one of the stakes in this race is that the court could once again become what it was during the Scott Walker era, which was practically a wholly owned subsidiary of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, a group that has been working, even as we speak, to undermine the ability to identify PFAS contamination in Wisconsin water and hold corporate polluters responsible. That's one of the many things at stake in this race. We'll be talking to state lawmakers. We'll be talking to experts in those various fields at the Overture Center tomorrow evening from 5 to 7 p.m. If you're in the Madison area, stop in. Learn more at upnorthnewswi.com/supreme. Or just listen right here. The Civic Media Radio Network is going to be covering the Up North News Supreme Court panel forum event, Protecting Justice for All, starting at just after the 5 o'clock news tomorrow evening, here all across the Civic Media Radio Network. So tune in for that. We look forward to telling you much more and then hearing what the experts have to say and then talking about it the next day, Thursday morning, when we do the show from Madison. Governor Tony Evers has put forward a new capital projects budget, and he put out a release about it yesterday, and it will not take long for Republicans to criticize the size of it. It is $4 billion in recommended investments for the state's existing infrastructure and major projects in 26 counties around Wisconsin. The governor, along with pointing out the many positives of these projects, also noted that because of, you know, an austerity budget frame from the Republican-led legislature, Wisconsin has a deferred maintenance backlog that is now topping out at about $13 billion. So that if you wanted to prevent some system failures, correct some safety hazards, avoid emergency breakdowns and other urgent repairs, you'd have to put $13 billion toward it. You can't, that's too much. So you've got to triage it where you can. And clearly, Republicans are not doing the work to maintain state infrastructure. And so the governor's capital projects budget is that size. And I can say as a former member of the State Building Commission, that it remains one of the very few places that is, I'm not going to say free of party politics. I'll just call it a place where members do take their responsibilities seriously much of the time. But we saw in the last session of the legislature politics coming into play in work that would prevent the College of Engineering from building new facilities in Madison, getting caught up in the politics of Republicans trying to prevent the teaching of racial justice and racial history and engaged in promoting diversity all across the UW system. So it is, you know, my hope certainly as a former member and as a taxpayer who would like to not shell out even bigger bucks down the future in the future because of deferred action on, you know, crumbling buildings, that this group can come together and approve a big chunk of what's in Governor Evers' budget. I looked from a national standpoint, and while we do a lot of focus on state news and state politics here, a lot of folks can't help but be watching the stock market and what it's been doing since Donald Trump took office with the mixed signals that he's giving on tariffs and trade. It's gotten to the point where, you know, people joke that what Donald Trump says in the morning is at odds with not Democrats, but with what Donald Trump says in the afternoon in terms of whether tariffs are in or out, whether this particular spending cut is in or out. So it's no wonder that Wall Street had one of its worst day of the year yesterday. And it wasn't helped at all by Secretary of State Marco Rubio selling out Ukraine before talks could even start in Saudi Arabia about the future of the war where Russia invaded Ukraine, with Marco Rubio saying that there would have to be some kind of land concessions for there to be any kind of peace, rather than any kind of unified force toward getting the invaders out of the lands that they invaded. But with Marco Rubio as Secretary of State for Donald Trump, you can see where Ukraine, especially after that Trump-Rubio-J.D. Vance disaster in the Oval Office last week, feels very much behind the eight ball and either is going to have to accept some kind of land concessions or hope that the rest of Europe remains united enough and supportive enough that they can withstand this ongoing Russian assault and beat it back. In fact, overnight, there was a drone attack in Moscow, 90-some drones from Ukraine attacking airport facilities there as the war continues to spread into other parts of Russia. It might behoove Russia to be the one being pressured to have peace talks and to give up its aim to remake the Soviet Union. But that's something that we may not see until more public pressure is put on folks like Trump and Rubio. More after this, you're up north. It was on this week in 1972 that Neil Young had the number one album with Harvest at the top of the charts. Just about 7:35 here on Up North News Radio on this Tuesday morning. And we were talking just a bit before the break about the Trump administration abandoning Ukraine. Cassandra writes in on YouTube, "It is absolutely shocking to me how many citizens are completely fine with selling out Ukraine. Anything Trump says goes. Our grandparents fought against these people. What is going on?" And there's also that impact on agriculture. Ukraine was pretty much the breadbasket of Europe. And as that has disrupted farming and harvesting and exporting, it has led to higher consumer prices around the world as a result. The U.S. can only do so much, less so when the U.S. is antagonizing its own trading partners. It is something we have talked to Hans Breitenmoser about extensively over these past 7-8 weeks. But we're also going to talk about Wisconsin Farmers Union Lobbying Day at the state capitol in Madison. Good morning, Hans. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Good to see you again. How did things go last week in Madison during the visit?
Oh, I think about as well as could be expected. Some of the things we did down there was we got involved in a press conference regarding all the federal funding freezes. Because there are some legislators in the state that are interested in getting a bill passed to sort of have the state have a backstop against some of these things, which is to say when the federal government does something crazy like, backs out of contracts that they had written, conservation efforts or some of the IRA things and so forth. There's people around the state who are getting pretty jittery because the funds that they were promised were paused and then opened up again. And it seems to go back and forth and back and forth. And so the idea behind this bill in the state of Wisconsin is to say, okay, if something like that happens and there's man-made chaos out of the White House, that Wisconsin would come in and try and make those contracts whole to the extent that, the Wisconsin budget is able to do that, just to sort of give farmers and other people who have been on the receiving end of some of this chaos some sort of confidence that they will, in fact, be made whole. I don't know how far into the weeds you want to get on these contracts and so forth, but it is the case that with conservation contracts and things of that nature, typically what happens is farmers, they make a contract with NRCS And then they start spending money on a conservation effort. And at the, you know, once the project is complete, they turn around, hand in their receipts and would expect to get the money that they were promised. And so do the banks who loan the short-term funds in there as well. And some of that has been upended and makes, you know, farmers and lenders pretty nervous. So this was an attempt to kind of speak to that issue.
Sure. So to put it another way, this is a reimbursement program. This is not a case where, you know, taxpayers through the USDA are shelling out all this money and then not seeing anything done for it. Farmers are actually borrowing money to get this work done and then getting reimbursed. And it's the Trump administration that is breaking that reimbursement commitment to farmers.
Yeah. And I think what's important to remember here is that, two things. Number one, a lot of these programs are very well thought out. And like I've said in the past, if you can get money, federal dollars close to the ground, especially in agriculture, they will reproduce like crazy. And those dollars are doing good things in terms of conservation efforts. It speaks to the quality of our surface and groundwater. Things like cover crops and grazing plans and manure storage and so forth. How that works is, you know, you enter into a contract and you expect that contract should be, that commitment that was made by both parties should be followed through on. And some of that isn't happening now. Now, my understanding as of late is that these funds got unpaused again. But one thing that concerns me is that when you've got lenders, you know, loaning this short-term money to get the project done until the reimbursement comes, I have to believe that rural lenders are looking at these things and saying, you know, what used to be an absolutely safe bet because it was backed up by the federal government now seems kind of sketchy and we don't want any part of it. And what good does that do for rural economies, I would like to know?
No, it undermines that notion, that phrase, the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, that when the U.S. government says we're going to do something for you, our farmers, we'll do it. Mm-hmm. And then to break your word essentially on that through, by the way, a manner that is at best extra legal, shall we say.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the other part of that conversation that people need to have. If you are of the mindset that these dollars, this type of money should not be spent on these types of things, well, that's fine. And let's have that conversation and let's have that debate. But at some point, we the people concluded that these were good programs and legislation got them in place and bureaucrats take care of the heavy lifting on getting things done. And if at some point we decide that these aren't good investments in rural America, then that's fine too. But let's have a means by which we go about that rather than just have a couple of billionaires who wouldn't know a cover crop from, you know, their lawn make all the decisions on this stuff.
It's interesting that you say that because it allows me to give another update when it comes to these tariffs. And again, the whole notion of hold the vote on these things, hold the vote, hold people accountable. Do you actually want to cut these programs for farmers? Now, as I explained to folks yesterday, we're coming up on another deadline for a potential government shutdown. I can't believe we're saying this again, but the last time they kicked the can down the road, they kicked it down until this coming Friday. Mm-hmm. So by then, Speaker Mike Johnson can only afford to lose one Republican vote, you know, if all Democrats stick together. And right now, it's not looking like he can actually pass what's called a continuing resolution, which is another way of kicking the can down the road. Now, let me set that aside for a second, that vote on a continuing resolution. When it comes to these tariffs, Donald Trump put them in place by declaring a fake emergency. There is a mechanism in the law that allows a president to declare an emergency and then unilaterally, without needing Congress's up or down vote, do things to impose tariffs. But in that same law, Congress can reel him back in. They can hold a vote and vote to end those tariffs that Trump put in through this fake emergency. Now here's where those two things come together. In the continuing resolution, Speaker Mike Johnson has put language in there that would delay or cancel the vote on ending the tariffs, because he does not want his Republican members to have to take an up or down vote on whether to keep these tariffs in place. They want to put everything in this one omnibus bill and scare everybody to say, hey, if you vote no on this, the whole government's going to shut down and it's going to be your fault no matter how much garbage we put in this thing. And so you see where this all comes together, that Hans, you and others want to see this up or down vote on, do you really want to do this to farmers? And you've got Speaker Mike Johnson doing everything possible to protect every Republican from having to actually publicly take a vote on where they stand on what Trump is doing to rural America.
Yeah, it's pretty disgusting, and it illustrates the spinelessness that we have inside our legislature amongst the Republicans at this point, unfortunately. And it gives me no joy to say that right now. It's just very, very frustrating because it doesn't get anything done. And the other irony, I think, is that it once again sort of gives license to all of those folks out in the countryside who have been sort of anti-government all the time and say, well, the government can't do anything right. The government can't do anything right. Well, yeah, we're seeing evidence of that now, but look who's causing the chaos here. Just pay attention to who's actually, creating this man-made chaos. And, you know, in ag, the thing is, in ag, we're already dealing with the weather. We're already dealing with markets. We have enough things to deal with that are uncertain, you know, and so we should be able to rely on, as you said earlier, the full faith of the U.S. government to say when they say something, that's what they'll actually do.
And instead, we get this intentional, willful neglect. There was another news story about more farm-related programs being canceled by the Trump administration through the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the USDA. And those cancellations affect more than $1 billion in purchasing local food from farmers for food banks and for schools. Those programs are called the Local Food for Schools Cooperative Agreement Program and the Local Food Purchase Assistance Cooperative Agreement Program. Now, my gut tells me that these were hardly make or break programs for the health of any individual farmer, but to cut $1 billion after the Biden administration had expanded these farm markets for farmers, it still got a sting.
Yeah. And again, it's just lousy public policy. I mean, you know, I know CSA farmers, you know, like small vegetable farmers who might not live or die by these things, but they do have a real impact on their, on their finances. And the bigger picture is that these things were created and sort of trying to made to grow for good reason, right? I mean, especially during the pandemic, we saw so many examples of great big corporate ag and the products that we produce going off, 1,000 miles in one direction to get processed and 1,000 miles back to feed us. These types of programs are designed to keep farmers and consumers as close together as possible, to eliminate as much of the price gouging that happens in between, and to make our whole food system safer and more resilient when that black swan flies in and suddenly, there's a E. coli or something, that happens that creates chaos in a large setting, that when it's more distributed like this, like some of these local food initiatives are trying to do, the food system is simply more resilient. It's more profitable for farmers. It gets high quality food to people who need it at an affordable price. It's a win-win-win, and it's just a really good investment in these rural economies.
It's going backwards from the lessons we learned from the COVID pandemic.
Absolutely.
That to put all of your eggs, almost literally, in the one basket of selling it to big ag, to selling it to major conglomerates owned by hedge funds and other friends of Donald Trump. Instead, diversify, avoid those supply chain disruptions, and like you said, bring farmers closer to their actual markets. This was a lesson learned from the pandemic that instead is being ended to reward, again, those mega corporations that become, the only alternatives for farmers and for consumers as well. In the minute or so I got left, I know we jumped. I jumped all over you when you were talking more about lobbying day. You talked about a couple of things. So let me wrap it up by saying, your impressions. You know how the legislature acts. Republican led with a Democratic governor. Was there anything in there in terms of your reception or things that said, well, here's maybe something we're going to get done this year?
Boy, that's a tough one, Pat. I mean, you know, anybody who's ever lobbied on behalf of any organization, especially when you're not a professional lobbyer, but you're just a farmer or, you know, somebody who's acting inside their own industry, you know, we're not, since we're not professionals, we go down to Madison with, I think, you know, in good faith and try and explain what we know to legislators who might not otherwise know what we know and try and educate those folks. And so sometimes you run into staff that does seem pretty receptive on some things and sometimes not so much.
And by the way, that's that staff that you're talking to, again, most of the time, I still believe these are good people, Democrat and Republican. These are good, hardworking folks who actually believe that government can play a role. They may differ on how it does it, but those are sometimes the best people to talk to. You can always tell the ones, though, that are complete ideologues who came in off the campaign side. Thankfully, those are fewer and far between. So I hope you got treated nicely, Hans. It was nice to talk to you again. Thank you so much for the update. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
You bet. Thanks, Pat. Be good.
All right. We will wrap things up with Chad Holmes coming up right after this. You're up north.
Live alone in a paradise that makes me think of two. Love lost, such a cost. Give me things that don't get lost.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
All right, time to wrap things up for this Tuesday morning on Up North News Radio. Earl Ingram coming up on many Civic Media stations, but at 98.9 WXCO in Wausau, we're going local, talking to one Chad Holmes from the Chad Holmes Show. Whether it's Earl or Chad or any of the programs across the Civic Media Radio Network, you can listen through the Civic Media app as well. Mr. Holmes, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. Doing very well, thanks.
Yeah, you're sounding good. You're sounding, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, which is, I hope a good sign, because this is, well, it's not really the calm before the storm for you. We're pretty well in the storm of, tournament time and, you know, spring sports are also getting underway at the same time, leading to the ongoing question, when does Chad Holmes sleep?
Well, the storm is over for me because all of our teams are out, so... Actually, last weekend was a storm because I was down in Madison for a few days, went back and forth a couple of times with state hockey and then some basketball. But at the end of the weekend, it all ended. So now it's like a few weeks before we get to the spring sports and a chance to hopefully rest the voice and be back to 100%. And it is, I think, back. But it is nice to take a step back for a few because it was a very, very busy winter from basically Thanksgiving until Saturday.
Yes, right. There are these two groups of folks that these two groups of people do not want to be misunderstood, but whether it's sports announcers or sports parents, there is that little voice that when the local team or when little Timmy's team is eliminated and you don't have to go through like three more rounds of postseason, there's a little voice that goes, I'm sad for you, Timmy. I really am, but
I get my Saturdays back.
I get a little bit of sleep. So it, you know, it's not meant to be harmful or cast dispersions, but you know, it's kind of like this daylight savings thing. You want the extra hour of sleep if you can get it.
No, absolutely. I'm still getting used to it. It takes me a while because in the fall, it's no problem. But boy, I tell you, the last couple of days, it's like, man, I can't fall asleep, number one, because I think that it's like too early.
Earlier. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, I mean, it's just, and I'm looking at the clock. I mean, every hour, it's almost like, oh, what time is it now? What time is it? I saw a note yesterday was talking about it on my show that, at least some folks, some doctors, scientists, whatever it may be, says it could take like 2 weeks for people to kind of get back, you know, their bodies to adjust to it. And I think it may well be that.
Yeah, for some it is. Len on the text line in Madison says, I'm slowly adjusting to the clock change and figure I will be fully adjusted by November 2nd, which is when the clocks switch back. So, you know, it's going to be a long 8 months for Len and for some of the others. And I forgot to ask Hans, you know, the question he surely gets asked twice a year. And what do the cows think about this? Because they don't get a vote, you know. And so once a year, they're like, you're here already. And then once a year, they're like, where have you been? You know, if cows could talk.
I was going to say, yeah.
I know. I love talking cows.
Yeah, yeah. What else are you covering Wausau-wise, things that are happening up there? Or shall we just have a new segment called What'd Your Mayor Do Now? Maybe you have other things.
No, I mean, the whole thing about it is, I mean, obviously, it comes and goes. We're still kind of waiting to see what ultimately the ethics committee decides to do. There's still, you know, obviously the process is going. There's an investigation going on with the state DOJ as well. And the whole point of it is, and there's this idea that I was talking to somebody the other day, and so they were talking to somebody that they normally would be politically aligned with. And this person, for whatever reason, is an ally of Denny, and it's kind of mind-blowing. But this person keeps on indicating that anybody who brings up the fact that Doug Denny removed that Dropbox illegally, well, they're trying to get rid of him. They're trying to impeach him. That's not going to happen.
No.
The whole point of it is admit that, hey, you stepped over the line here, that maybe you got a little overzealous in the midst of a campaign or whatever it may be. But the idea that there should be at least a little bit of accountability seems pretty self-evident.
Yes.
Not anymore.
We don't have to go to DEFCON 1 every single time on this, you know. Well, maybe we switch gears to your congressman then. On the text line from Eric in Tulsa. Good morning, Pat. Please tell Hans that I personally spoke with Congressman Tom Tiffany last Saturday. He told me he is voting yes on the continuing resolution because it's the right thing to do, in his words. Hans and his friends need to get on their phone and ring Tom Tiffany's phone off the hook. I'm not telling you not to. I'm just saying everything that Tom Tiffany indicates is that, you know, Donald Trump's going to say jump and he's going to say how high.
Well, the idea of Tom Tiffany saying it's the right thing to do kind of says it all right there.
And how convenient that this next one kicks the can to September 30th. Oh, the end of the fiscal year. So they will have gone through the entire year again without actually having to write a budget and just basically turning the government into a slush fund for Elon Musk and Donald Trump. So Tom Tiffany's good with, you know, more power to him, I guess.
I thought you made a wonderful point with Hans near the end of your conversation, talking about how Johnson's trying to put in this aspect into the CR to basically allow Republicans not to take a stand and let people know where they stand on this. You talk about the opposite of profiles and courage. That is the opposite of profiles and courage. I mean, we elect a Democrat, Republican to stand there and actually have their voice be heard on behalf of the people that vote them in, and to say, well, we're just not going to say anything because, you know, we'll let Donald Trump and Elon Musk do it all. That is gutless right
now. Enough campaign ads can make up for that, apparently, is the thinking they've got here. Chad Holmes' show is next on 98.9 WXCO. Thank you, sir. Have a great day. Mr. Bach is back in 2 hours for Matt and Air on Air. Tune in for that. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. here up north. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a wonderful day.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community.
Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.